Hi, Vince, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Bit of a
Good.
cold day, but there you
That's February for you, isn't it? I always find it starts off really cold, but by the end, it's quite nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, so we thought we'd just do a little session where we talk about Q1 and particularly looking at CRO and some of the insights that we found so far based on the end of last year and what we've seen in those first really valuable 4 weeks of the year. Because I think you'll agree with me, it's been surprising.
Yeah, well, we've seen. I think the key thing is the market's definitely picking up. Everyone was sort of getting a little bit frustrated towards the end of the year. It's starting to pick up. It's not where it should be yet, but I think it will be by Q2. We're expecting things to really start going then. Certainly, a lot of clients are gearing up for that with marketing campaigns and doing a lot more around their EVP just to attract. We know at the moment we're running on around about 24% attrition.
Hi.
Which is high. So retention's going to be high on talent acquisition's minds and HR's minds as to how do you hold on to the people you want to, which is really important. But it's been good. So if you think about it, I mean, if we're looking at the amount of RFPs coming out, you're looking at about 24 to 27% of RFPs are now coming out into the market. It's really good. Bearing in
It's a
mind
really
that I
healthy
think,
start.
we looked at some information that came out from Medpace, and they were looking at about 63 billion pounds worth of business from the biotechs, which is good. So obviously the work's there, it's going to be coming out. I know I've spoken to about five or six of the bigger CROs, and they're starting to see a lot of these RFPs coming out where they can sign them off and, put their bids in, see where they go, which is great. I think the recruitment companies are being a little bit more confident as well, which is really good.
I'm seeing that for sure.
So where they were slowing down, that's looking good. But I suppose the most difficult thing for everyone is really looking at biometrics, so data management and regulatory. I think they're going to be the real ones that are starting to take off, primarily because we need more of them. But also because other industries always come and take our people from pharma and life sciences, because we've got really good people, so why wouldn't they?
Do you think that that's going to be the biggest challenge? It's going to be keeping those people in this industry.
Absolutely, I really do think so. And I think my advice to clients at the moment is, start to think strategically about what you're going to do about those roles specifically. That's the start of the year so far, I think.
What do you think makes other industries so attractive to data analysts, biometrics people, and regulatory people? Is it finances? Is it work-life balance? Like, what are we doing wrong?
I think it's money. If someone really needs someone, they're going to pay what it takes. You can't do anything without data now. And most people in our sector are really good. I'll be honest, they are. So, understanding what you do with that data, how to present it, what does it mean to the business, those real clever analysts, even the management consultancies have taken more and more of those people on board. So, that's what I'm seeing as the biggest threat, I think.
It's an interesting one. I've got an old school friend of mine. He does regulatory affairs, but he does it within things like aerosols, so room sprays, deodorants, that kind of thing. And I've told him, you'd have a really good time in life sciences. You'd really enjoy it. And he's adamant he ain't moving for nothing. They've got him in a chokehold, and he's happy, which is the key thing, I think.
Yeah, well, again, it's difficult for people to come into the life sciences sector because obviously the legislation and regulations are very, very tight compared to most other industries. You know what to look for, whereas here there's many things to consider. But it's going to be a big issue. So from my point of view, anyone listening to this that's got teams, be aware they will be poached and you will find it difficult to replace them. So ring fence where you can.
Absolutely. So speaking of teams, what do you think the core things for TA teams to be aware of for the next 2 months are? Like, what are the most important things would you consider?
Talking to clients, I think the big focus, believe it or not, is going to be to retrain and upskill people, especially soft skills. We assume everyone knows how to use Word properly. We assume everyone knows how to use PowerPoint, how to use the tools that you've got. And I can assure you from what I'm hearing, that is not the case. So upskilling in all of those skills is going to be a big thing. And I think the other one is really looking a bit more at AI. I mean, everyone thinks it's the most wonderful thing ever, but the feedback I'm getting from senior people in the sector is, you know, you've got all these tools,
yeah,
but they're coming so fast and so quickly that, you know, people are not given the chance or can't master the ones they've got, or even use sometimes the ones they've got.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is leading to, you know, more of the tech stack review. You know, we've got all of this tech. Are we actually using it? And most of the time people say, oh, yeah, we're using it. But they're using maybe one part of it, or 20% of what the product can actually do. And you've got to think, well, that's, you know, not what we bought it on for. So
100%. When you consider FarmyWeb, for example, an alarming amount of our day is trying to get people to utilize the stuff that they've paid for. You know, it's, you've paid for this, you can be doing this, why aren't you? It's really hard to get people to look at the tech they're using and actually think differently. You know, they'll think, oh, it's just, that's where I put my jobs, that's where I get my CVs, but they won't think about the recruitment advertising, the marketing side of it. They'll just go with what they believe it is without asking any questions. And I think that's where people are falling down.
Yeah. Everyone's busy, and it's down to management to really make sure that your teams, no matter where they are, what you're doing, whether you're in talent acquisition or recruitment, you know, you need to make sure you're using what you've got, because it's costing a lot of money.
Speaking of money. Yeah. LinkedIn.
So LinkedIn's an interesting one. I think they're going for world domination.
Why
wouldn't they? You know, they've got everyone by the neck. So, but I think this year was, 24% increase, and probably looking at the same again for next year, and people renewing their contracts and tying people in. So you've got to pay whether you use it or not.
That's it. We spoke to a recruitment company at the end of last year who'd been getting 50% uplift for next year.
Yeah, it's pretty dire. But, unfortunately, everyone's invested, and it's hard to let that go. So we'll see how that goes. The other one that I saw is starting to grow is a lot of the RPOs picking up work from organisations, where the organisations have actually reduced their talent acquisition team and know that it's quite tight. So for peaks and troughs, you know, they really do, for those peaks, need to bring in the RPOs to support them for short term, you know, 3 month, 6 month sessions when they are really busy. And we know that's probably coming Q2 for a lot of people. And I know everyone would love to be back, especially in the big CROs, to, you know, recruiting 100 people a month, a week, whatever it might be. But, you know, some of those companies have got to recruit 800 to 1,000 people. So, you know, it's going to be difficult. And the people are not there.
No, and that's the key thing. There's plenty of work to go around. There's plenty of money to go around. It's just having the right qualified people. And this goes back to an age-old conversation we've had. We can't get people in industry quick enough, can we?
No. And I think, unfortunately, dare I say it, this is just a personal view, I think a lot of people got promoted very, very quickly in the times when it was really busy, probably paid well over what they should be and not qualified to do what they should be doing. But that's just my view, and I'm sure a lot of people could shoot me down on that.
We hear it anecdotally on a daily basis, don't we? You know, people are looking for a CRA too, and they can't find the right people. People that are saying they are that don't have the necessary skills to be that, or the tenure. You know, it is particularly difficult, and I completely sympathize with people that are in that position, because you're kind of between a rock and a hard place, aren't you, when you're finding the right talent?
Yeah, and especially if you need them. You know, you've got clients that need the work done, you've got your, you know, managers, you know, throwing everything at you to make it happen, and you've got to get people in place.
It's true. It's very, very true. So I guess RPOs is a really interesting one. We talked about this at length towards the tail end of last year. I'm seeing RPOs that aren't historically life science RPOs coming into life sciences, bringing in a wealth of talented recruiters and winning clients left, right and center. And honestly, I didn't really expect to see that. I thought that there's kind of five big RPOs within life sciences, but I'm seeing more and more out of industry ones coming in. Are you seeing the same?
I've seen probably three or four come in this month alone, which I was quite surprised about. But I think it's, again, it's what are you bringing those people in for? What are they trying to take over? So, you know, let's face it, if they're good recruiters, they've got a good team, they've got good tools that can help them support that, you know, the knowledge will be there somewhere. So yeah, I particularly think it's a good idea. But we know the reduction in talent acquisition is a global thing. So it's something we've got to put up with, I think, really.
I think so too. So let's look at global on a more sort of large scale level. The future of Q1 and then beyond Q1, what do you think in terms of a global CRO particularly we're going to see?
Yeah, well, I think let's go from the top, really, and I use that term loosely, the USA. At the moment in the USA, I think California is still pretty much going and doing quite well. The rest of the country's okay, but it's not doing fantastic things like it used to. So I think there's still a little bit of worry, especially from a political point of view. Everyone's waiting to see how things settle down after President Trump gets himself in position. Some things he's doing are going to be good. Some are not so good. But I think overall, the administration before was actually pretty proactive on, you know, doing the best for the country. But at the moment, it's just fairly static from what we're seeing. I think the growth areas are probably a mirror at the moment. We've seen a number of American companies come over here, especially Spain, Portugal, France, obviously the UK. The Nordics have picked up quite a lot of work that we've seen. Poland, Bulgaria, you know, Eastern Europe in particular, there's a lot of good people there. There's a number of good hubs. Yeah. If you look at APAC, got a few problems there. So Japan are really short on CRAs to actually get things going. I think the last quote was, you know, they needed about 500 CRAs to actually, you know, get the work done that they had. So that's going to have to go somewhere. Australia are making a play to actually bring more work in there. And interestingly, just as a sort of bit of a side view, if you look at LATAM, that's really taken off. Mexico being the hub, Colombia, pretty good. Obviously, Chile and Argentina are a little bit wobbly from a political point of view at the moment, but the work's going down there. But the one that's interesting me the most is South Africa leading the push into the rest of Africa for more diverse trials. I can see that really taking off. So we're seeing a lot of companies getting a footprint out there, starting to do well.
That's good. It's about time.
Korea, interestingly, we're seeing quite a lot of a push there. India's pretty much as it was, fairly stable. I know everyone's got a footprint in India. It'd be interesting to see if we can mature that workforce. So that'll be quite good as well. China is another one that's making a big play for clinical trials, but I'm not seeing too much influence at the moment, but I'm not sure where that will go in the future. So one to watch, I think.
Yeah, agreed. So focusing on Europe for a minute, obviously they have a whole new sort of government in place. And one of the pledges that they made was basically to, you know, try and get Europe back as a clinical trial center of excellence in terms of a global footprint, because, you know, they were losing, I think they said they lost something like 6-7% of all trials over the last decade to other countries and other areas.
Yeah.
And that's quite simply something that they didn't want to happen, obviously. So making a play to get that additional 6-7% of business and then make that more like 10, there's going to have to be a huge amount of investment, because Europe isn't cheap, is it? Compared to some of the places we've just spoken about.
It's not cheap, but it is very good. Mm. And there's a difference there. If you want quality, sometimes you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
DAC region in particular, you know, that group of countries, very, very good, high quality work.
Yeah.
Turn over Switzerland especially.
Oh, for sure.
Really good. I mean, obviously, they're going to be hit by, I suppose, because what happens with the drug companies, they're all going to suffer a little bit with the Trump administration at the moment, but that may change. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one. And obviously, all of those things will affect recruitment, who's in place, where they go, what they're doing. But if you look across Europe at the moment, everyone's in a little bit of turmoil because of the politics and what's going on in those countries. So again, we'll have to wait and see how that's going to affect the industry as a whole. And I think we'll see that fairly quickly moving through the year. I think by the end of Q2, early into Q3, we'll have a very clear indication of what that's likely to have done.
Yeah, I think so too. Obviously, in the US, where Trump is very much just getting back into the swing of things, it's never going to be immediate, but it's very high on his agenda, isn't it? You know, his choice of health secretary leaves a lot to be admired, but he's always had a bit of a place in his heart for life sciences, because of how much money it brings in. So I'd hope that there will be some positive changes, but I'm not entirely sure on what we're going to see is my overall thought.
Well, I'm sure it'll be positive for America. So
well, regardless. Here's hoping. Yeah. And then finally, the UK, you know, we've had a new government in place for what, 7 months now. I've seen bits and bobs, people winning funding, people, you know, being granted R&D grants, that kind of thing, which is all really, really positive. Not necessarily the amount that I expected to see. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's sorely lacking. I know we've got the residue. Yeah, we've got the residue of some of the incentives put in place from the outgoing parliament. The current situation is not really doing very much. It should be a high priority because, you know, we wanted to be a very serious player in Europe for clinical trials. And unfortunately, if you look at the amount of effort that France, you know, Spain, Portugal, even the Nordics, I think, put more money into winning clinical trials than we have. So we need to up our game, really, in my opinion. There's a lot of choice out there. There's a lot of good companies. A lot of companies in the UK have hubs here with lots of good people.
Yeah, we do.
We need to utilize them and make the most of it. All that work will go somewhere else.
Absolutely. Seeing a lot more work up in the north part of the UK. You know, it used to be very much Golden Triangle, but, you know, places like Leeds, for example, we spoke about Newcastle, you know, they're really, really, really getting up there in terms of the amount of work that's going there. Do you think that, again, that that's a cost thing, or do you just think that the UK's naturally growing and people are just looking at diversifying the portfolio a bit?
I just think it's where the people are. You know, if you can bring people to a certain location, the price is right, you've got everything you need in place, then I think that works. And this is why we see these hubs coming up for clinical research, these science parks. It's easy to keep people all in the same place.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think we'll see more of that. You know, it's rather than, because people can work hybridly anyway. I mean, I was looking at a stat here. 76% of employers in the pharma and life sciences sector have actually adopted hybrid working regardless. So, you know, you need people to go into an office. You need an office environment, especially for management and training. We did a whole lot of work around employer road mapping and skills updates last year. You know, we need more management control over people working from home, need to help them, make sure they're, you know, think of their well-being, all those sorts of things. But I think hybrid working is here to stay and you're not going to change it. So you've got to make it work. What have you got to do?
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, I think hybrid's the best model, isn't it? You know, let everyone kind of pick what works best for them within that window and just make it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think obviously Q2 is looking really busy already. People are gearing up for that as their main sort of kickoff. But the other thing that I've seen a lot of people thinking about is more strategic thinking around talent acquisition. So planning with the hiring managers, thinking about what's likely to come, especially around biometrics, data management, regulatory, any of those really unique AI stroke IT based skill sets. I think you need to plan for that right now. Start thinking about it, because if that's key to your business, don't lose those people. But I know a lot of industries are looking at us, but they always are. I just think we've gone through a little subtle change, and while things have been quiet, I think people are probably thinking about moving. So I can't remember what the latest stat is. Was it let's see where it is on my list here. 41% of people will be looking to change jobs in Q1 or Q2. No,
it's high.
Whether they do, whether they don't, who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting year. I mean, from what we've seen already in January, it's shaping up to be a better year than 2024. Obviously, that's hugely dependent on all the things we've just spoken about, whether or not that comes to fruition. But I'm actually optimistic. I never had optimism in 2024, but I do now.
It always picks up. It's just a question of time. So
yeah, that's it. Ebbs and flows. Anything else you want to finish with? Any conclusions?
No, not really. I mean, I keep an eye on, you know, the clinical development index, on who's doing well, all those sorts of things. And it's usual story. Some are up, some are down. But it's early days yet. We're only in, well, January, really. But even though it's the first week in February, there won't be any figures until the end of the month. But I think at the moment, let's see how things pan out. It's looking good. Let's hope it carries on that way.
Absolutely. So that's the end of today's session then. So for anyone who's listening who is hiring within clinical research, reach out to us. We've always got loads of data, stats and things that you can be doing to make your life a little bit easier. And anyone who's listening to the podcast and genuinely quite enjoys it and wants to be on an episode, reach out, because we'd love to know what you want to talk about and bring it to our audience. So for now, that's goodbye from us. But thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, everyone.